So in 15, we ended up talking about chloroplasts, and just keep in mind that the so-called thylakoid membrane, which is making up all this green stuff, it's one elaborate membrane, but it's folded in such a way that makes it look like these little coins, and one coin-looking thing is a thylakoid. That's just this one that's being indicated. A stack of them is called a granum, plural of grana, and there are several grana within one chloroplast. And that's not just the figment of someone's imagination. Slide 16 shows you that grana are real things. This is one granum made up of many thylakoids. But it's all one elaborate membrane. No new information, though, as far as what we've already talked about. Slide 17 shows you part of the cytoskeleton. We talked about the cytoskeleton and the fact that it is made out of how many major categories of protein fibers? Three, right. Two of them are listed here, microtubules and microfilaments. What's the third category? Not shown here. Right, intermediate filaments get their name because when it comes to the width or the diameter of these fibers, they're in between the widths of the other two. So microtubules are the largest diameter. Here's one. You see how wide it is. Microfilaments are the thinnest, smallest diameter, and intermediate filaments are intermediate size, but they do different jobs that we'll talk about in these next few slides. 18 focuses on microtubules, the large ones. Not only are microtubules the largest diameter, they are hollow, which is why they're called microtubules, not microrods. But microtubules serve as little roads along which various things can be moved to get from one place in the cell to another place in the cell, just like we use trucks to move things around the country via roads. In a cell, microtubules are the roads, though. And the trucks, in this analogy, are these red proteins shown in cartoon form called motor proteins. They really look more like a person walking than a truck. Two legs, and each leg individually walks by connecting to a part of the microtubule a little bit farther down the line. Each step requires energy in the form of ATP, so it's expensive to move things around the cell. But the motor protein is carrying a cargo, a vesicle containing whatever is being moved from one place in the cell to the other. That's not just a cartoon either. That's really how these things are shaped. You can see a real photomicrograph here. This is the microtubule, the two legs of the motor protein walking along as it goes. 19 is a table that compares these three major protein fibers that make up the cytoskeleton. I've already talked about the fact that microtubules are largest diameter, microfilaments smallest diameter, and intermediate filaments somewhere in between. The microfilaments, smallest diameter ones, are important for changing shapes of cells. And that's because different kinds of microfilaments can interact with each other in such a way that there is overlap between them. This is how your muscles work, for instance. Muscle cells get shorter, not because the microfilaments get shorter, but because they overlap each other more and more. And that makes it the overall structure shorter. That's just one example of using these, but they're used in movements in that respect. And intermediate filaments are mostly structural elements made out of keratin proteins, which is a very strong protein. That's why there's a lot of it in your hair and nails, because those need to be strong structures. So they act like ropes and cables that can withstand forces without things tearing apart. Let's look at some more pictures. Slide 20 the centrosome that I talked about when we looked at the overall view of the cell. Remember, the centrosome is not the two pieces of licorice-looking stuff. Those are centrioles. The centrosome is the cloudy yellow region, which acts as a microtubule organizing center in a cell. So that's where the microtubules grow from, the centrosome. And when it comes time for that cell's life to be over and split to become two new cells, then there will be two centrosomes, one on each end of the cell. Whether it's mitosis or meiosis, the two kinds of eukaryotic cell division, there will be two centrosomes, and then microtubules growing out from each of those two. And those microtubules, as we'll look at the details later, will interact with each other, and they'll interact with chromosomes made of DNA. And that will allow each of the two daughter cells, as they're called, that are created, to get its fair share of the chromosomes because of the microtubules and these centrosomes. The centrioles, as I've said before, I can't tell you much about because we haven't figured out what they do, but we find them in the centrosomes of animal cells, not in other eukaryotic chromosomes or centrosomes. 21. Well, now we're looking at a couple different kinds of cell appendages, things that stick out from the main part of the cell. In the top we have flagella, that's the plural of flagellum. A flagellum is a long, relatively long whip-like structure that when it moves, pushes on the fluid medium in which the cell lives. Just like the propeller, when it moves, pushes on the fluid medium that the boat is in. And that will propel the thing through the medium. In this case, the cell is being propelled through the medium. So a flagellum, if a cell has it, or doesn't necessarily have to have just one, it will propel the cell. So it's a locomotory device. It's about moving the cell from point A to point B. Not all cells are flagellated, but if a cell is flagellated, it will typically have one or just a small number of flagella at one end of the cell, not all over it, in other words. On the other hand, there's a much shorter appendage called a cilium, the singular of cilia. Cilium means hair. Well, these are not real hair, but they look like little hairs on the surface of a cell, if a cell has them. And if a cell is ciliated, then it will typically have a bunch of cilia all over the surface, not just at one end like a flagella, like a flagellated cell. Cilia can also be locomotory devices, just like flagella, meaning they can move a cell from point A to point B by moving back and forth, by the cilia moving back and forth. That's true for a free living cell, a cell on its own, not attached to other things, in other words. But you also have ciliated cells that are part of multicellular organisms like your own body. And those cells are not free living, right? They are part of tissues. They're held in place because they're stuck to other cells or stuck to surfaces. And so in that case, cilia, the beating of cilia back and forth is not so much about moving the cell through the medium. In that case, it's more about moving the medium past the cell. A perfect example in your body would be cells that make up the epithelium that lines the interior of your trachea, your windpipe, which delivers air to the bronchi, eventually to the lungs. Well, you're breathing all the time if you're alive, and whatever is in that mixture that we call air gets delivered through the trachea. The epithelial cells of the trachea are not only ciliated, they are mucus. And how do you spell mucus?
M-U-C-O-U-S.
That's one way. It was a trick question because there's the word mucus and there's the word mucus. Do you hear the difference? Yeah, M-U-C-U-S is the noun. That's the actual stuff. But if a cell is mucus, meaning it produces the stuff, then we use the adjective, which is O-U-S. A mucous membrane, for instance, is made up of cells that produce mucus, the stuff. So they are mucus cells, meaning they produce mucus, and mucus is sticky stuff. So heavy debris in the air, much heavier than the molecules of gas, things like dirt or smoke, if you're foolish enough to smoke, or bacteria or other possible pathogens that are in the air, most of those hopefully stick to the mucus rather than being put into the lungs, which have a very delicate lining. So that holds them into place, but that doesn't really solve the problem because there would be an accumulation over time, right? So you have the cells are also ciliated. Those cilia are continuously beating, and therefore as that mucus fills up with particles, the mucus layer gets swept. The medium gets moved across the cells upward through the trachea to your throat. And throughout the day you are intermittently swallowing. That's to deliver all of this stuff that gets swept out of your airway down your esophagus to your stomach, which is the perfect place to put stuff, especially that could contain pathogens that could harm you, because that's the most inhospitable place in your body because of the very low pH. Most species can't survive that high acidity, so they die in your stomach. But that's two uses of cilia, moving the cell through the medium or moving the medium past the cells. Let's go to 22. We're looking at just one cilium here. And if you look at a cross-section, you can see that it has a molecular structure based on an arrangement of microtubules. It's easier to look at the cartoon, but it's actually arranged just like it is in the cartoon. So all these yellow things are microtubules that are, molecularly speaking, no different from the microtubules making up the cytoskeleton. And these red things are motor proteins, just like we looked at. Instead of just having one motor protein carrying a vesicle as cargo to get it from one place in the cell to another, we have an army of motor proteins that are walking along one microtubule, but they're connected to another microtubule, right? Instead of connected to vesicles like in the other picture. Now, if that's the only thing you had in place, motor proteins walking or connected to one microtubule and walking along another microtubule would just cause the microtubules to slip past each other like these pens, right? But these blue proteins, these are still different proteins, hold the microtubules roughly in place. They can't slip past each other very far. And so that's more like a folded piece of paper. When you fold a piece of paper, each half of the paper represents a microtubule, and the fold itself is one of those proteins holding them together. So when you have walking happening, instead of them just slipping past each other, it will bend it. And that's how cilia beat back and forth. These motor proteins are continuously busy walking, using up a lot of ATP to do that. It's an expensive process. Well, I didn't really have to go through with that because slide 23 shows you that in pictures, but it's not moving, so maybe you didn't understand it as well. But these tethers, these blue tethers, are proteins keeping them from simply slipping past each other, causing them to bend. Well, we're looking at microvilli here, and remember, not all cells have microvilli, but what do microvilli accomplish if a cell has them? Keeping in mind that this test is in less than a week. Right, it drastically increases the surface area without really adding any volume. So all of the surfaces of these microvilli are simply extensions of the plasma membrane folding back and forth. But the interior of each microvillus, as you see here, features microfilaments, which are then connected to the main part of the cytoskeleton. So each microvillus is not just an empty bag flopping around. It actually has some structural integrity because of the microfilaments. Microfilaments are also featured in 25. At the top, we see how muscles work. An individual muscle cell is enormously long compared to most cells. It can be long because that's just one dimension, right? But you can be long as you're still very microscopically small in the other dimensions. You still have a high surface area to volume ratio. But anyway, the however long the whole muscle is, each individual cell in there is that same length. And it's made of a bunch of little end-to-end subunits, one of which we see right here bounded by these gray walls. This is one sarcomere, as it's called, but you don't have to remember that word. Anyway, it's an end-to-end arrangement. Each sarcomere is invisibly small, but each sarcomere features two different kinds of microfilaments, purple one and an orange one here. And notice the orange ones are tethered to these walls. So when there's increased overlap, not shortening of the filaments themselves, just overlap between them, then that drags these walls closer to each other. That shortens the sarcomere, and the same thing's happening to all the other sarcomeres, so the overall muscle cell gets much shorter. Microfilaments are involved in muscles, but they're also involved in just changing the shape of the cell otherwise, in a different kind of cell. This is an amoeboid cell. Amoeba is not really a species. It's a general word that we call cells that move or locomote in this fashion. They continuously change shapes to move from point A to point B. Well, they're doing that because of the interaction between microfilaments. And plants can use interactions between microfilaments to undergo what is called cytoplasmic streaming, moving things in the cytoplasm around, which you can easily witness if you put a living sample of plants, cells, not a prepared slide that is dead, but you take it off of a living plant, put it onto a light microscope, and it will undergo cytoplasmic streaming because it's trying to get those chloroplasts closer to the lamp on the microscope, where that's where the light is. So, you know, you want to get those chloroplasts there because they receive the light for the photosynthesis. 26. No new information here either. We already talked about plasmodesmata, the plural of plasmodesma. Each one is a tunnel. It's an example of an intercellular junction that we see in between plant cells. And the only thing that you didn't see before is that we looked at just a single cell before. Here you have multiple cells, clearly showing that there are passageways between them, which is why in a huge plant, well, any size plant, but plants can be huge, there's really one big compartment of cytoplasm made up of many cells that have passageways between them. 27. Now, this is a little piece of plasma membrane, as you see, but a plasma membrane contains various kinds of proteins. We'll be talking about those in a minute. But here we have proteins that are part of the membrane acting for strain relief, more or less, because the proteins that are part of the membrane are simultaneously connected to other proteins that are outside of the cell. They're part of the extracellular matrix. These proteins, of course, were manufactured inside the cell. That's the only place you can make proteins, but they were exported. They're simultaneously connected to those extracellular proteins and to proteins that make up the cytoskeleton. So that if some force pulls on these proteins outside the cell, that force will be transmitted to the protein in the membrane, which then gets transferred to the cytoskeleton instead of just rupturing the plasma membrane. That's why I say it's kind of like strain relief. If you pulled on it without being connected to the interior, at least you would take that protein out of the membrane, which could be bad, but worse than that, you could just explode the cell. 28 is Also, no new information. It just shows you a photomicrograph of Plasmodesmata to show you that they are real things, not just cartoon tunnels. And 29 is a slide that surveys three major kinds, well, really four, of animal intercellular junctions. So Plasmodesmata are plant intercellular junctions, but animals have them too. They're not called Plasmodesmata. They come in different varieties that are shown here, starting with desmosomes. Now, this is a single cell that we're looking at, really only half of a cell, because the front part has been removed. So we're looking at the interior of it. One of those categories, though, of intercellular junctions is desmosomes, which are complexes of proteins. All of these intercellular junctions are made out of proteins. But a desmosome is a complex of cellular proteins concentrated in one spot or another. And they are associated with the plasma membrane of one cell and of the plasma membrane of a different cell adjacent to it in the same place. These function more or less as spot welds, which is a way to hold sheets of metal together, not by binding them everywhere they meet, but just in certain spots they're welded. This is how a car body is manufactured, out of flat pieces of metal that get deformed into shapes and then spot welded together. It makes them a lot stiffer that way without adding a lot of material. So desmosomes are function as ways to hold adjacent cells together, keep them connected to each other. They have strong structural integrity. Shown below that in the cartoon are gap junctions. Now, these are the animal versions of Plasmodesmata. They're totally different proteins, but they are arranged similarly so that they form little hollow tunnels. And therefore, they are used for the same reason, for intercellular communication. By passing things through those tunnels, the cell is communicating to the next cell. And a really good example in your body that's important to keep you alive occurs in your heart the muscle that makes up your heart. The cardiac muscle makes up all four chambers of the heart. And the heart has to operate as a pump, really two pumps in one. But anyway, each chamber, in order to be part of a functional pump, each chamber, which is made of many different millions of individual muscle cells, all of those muscle cells have to contract as simultaneously as possible in order for the entire atrium or ventricle to squeeze on the blood and push it in one direction as an efficient pump. To do that, the first cell that contracts gets its signal that tells it to contract, and that signal is in the form of ions moving. Well, those ions then pass from one cell through gap junctions to the next cell, causing it to contract, and so on. So it can be, you know, all of the atrial cells will contract more or less at once, and then shortly after, all of the ventricular cells will contract because of gap junctions. The tight junction that's shown at the top of the figure is more complex in structure. It's a huge complex of proteins. And you're only seeing half of it because it's like a piece of tape. It's a band that goes all the way around the circumference of the cell. And it's, using the tape analogy, it's like double-sided tape because it's stuck to this cell. Plus, it's stuck to all the cells that are around this cell. And that does somewhat hold the cells together, but that's not the major function. That job is already being performed by desmosomes. Tight junctions evolved as a way to keep things from going through the gaps between cells. So I need to tell you here that you can use the word membrane in two different ways, two scales. I've used the word membrane many times already in the term, but up to now I've been talking about a subcellular structure. Right? It's much smaller than the cell itself. Whether it's a plasma membrane or a piece of membrane of a membrane-bounded organelle like a mitochondrion, that it's all basically the same stuff, but that is a microscopic membrane, right? Made of individual molecules. You can also talk about a macroscopic membrane that's made out of many cells. Like your skin, for instance, is a membrane. That's much, much bigger in scale, right? Made up of many membranes.
So if you consider, just I'll draw a simple two-layer of cell membrane.
This collection of cells is making up one membrane, in, like the skin, for instance. And if you are a particle trying to get through that macroscopic membrane, in order to be successful, you have to take either of two routes. One route is called the cellular route, because it involves actually entering cells.
So the particle would have to enter a cell in this layer, go through the length of that cell, exit the other side, and then enter another cell, for instance, until however many layers there are gotten through.
That's the cellular route. It involves going through plasma membranes, which are just part of this overall macroscopic membrane. The only other possibility, if the particle is going to get through, is to take what's called the paracellular route. Para, like in paralegal, means next to. So that doesn't involve actually entering any cells.
That would mean moving through the spaces between cells, like that arrow.
That's the paracellular route. And that's exactly, this paracellular route is exactly what tight junctions are trying to block. Because if there are tight junctions,
that's band of tape, a tight junction, in this macroscopic membrane, then the particle will only be able to get up to the tight junction and then it will be blocked.
Which means if a particle is going to be successful in getting through, it's going to have to take the cellular route, which puts the cells in charge, because the cells can at least partially determine what types of things get through them, get into them, and therefore take the cellular route. What is not shown here, but it's kind of a separate category of animal intracellular junctions, look just like a desmosome, but they're called hemidesmosomes. What does hemi mean?
Half.
Demi means half. Semi means half. Hemi means half. So a hemidesmosome is like half of a desmosome. A desmosome connects two adjacent cells together. A hemidesmosome would appear down here where this cell is connected to this basement membrane. It would be half of a desmosome holding it, not to another cell, but to this membrane that these are all connected to. Okay. We are done with this chapter. 30 is just one of these summary slides. I don't read these to you, but you might want to look through those for quick summary. I've already talked about all of that, though.